our clients, one, they get comfortable.
Yeah.
They think they have all the time in the world. And for me, this year was one of those reminders that you don't have as much time as you think. You really don't. And so, yeah, you really just have to look in the mirror and say, what's a priority? What's important? And usually what we say we want, it's not easy to get. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Jake Sheehy.
How you doing? What's
Whiskey
happening?
Whiskey Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Great day to be alive. Feeling great.
Great day to be alive.
Yes, sir.
I love it. I love starting Whiskey Wednesdays off with your new motto.
Yeah.
Great day to be alive.
Thankful to be love here, it. Man. Happy to be here. Got some great stuff on today's agenda. Educational stuff. So I'm really good. Excited about it, man.
Awesome. What do we got on there?
Okay, so first off, we're talking about, you know, there's been some huge layoffs that happened in this fourth quarter. We're talking about thousands of people that are losing their jobs right before holidays. What that's about. Then we're going to go right into short-term rental stuff. You know, we're cutting some of the fat here, right? We're going into short-term rental stuff.
Right
into it. Then we're going to go into, you know, should you leave Airbnb because these fees are not, what that even looks like, kind of going to take a new opinion on that. We're going into this article, Expedia Group, they're saying some things about video. Whoa, we don't know if we agree with that one.
Okay.
Then we're talking about Vrbo, their Vrbo Care initiative that can really, I think, possibly tank your short-term rental. We'll see, though. We're going to talk about it. Then we're talking about mindset motivation, leveraging the job you hate and turning it into the life you've always wanted. So we're going to end on a really positive note, but we got some educational stuff and we got this trending topic. First trending topic, you know, I'm sure many people have heard about the Amazon. They cut 14,000 jobs. And I believe, what was it? Was it Microsoft?
Microsoft like 9,000.
9,000. Intel, they cut 27,000 this year. A bunch of jobs, you know. Are you feeling, as a business owner, you go, like, that's just part of it. But at this, or like, how do you hire 14,000 people?
That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
And it's just that disruption that's happening in, like, a lot of the headlines want to make it sound like these companies are not doing very good.
Mm-hmm.
They're also coming up on the fourth quarter. Their earnings reports are coming out and they're doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. And this is some of the things, a lot of times layoffs come before earnings reports because the shareholders and the stock tends to react positively when you have a lot less people to pay on payroll, and it shows higher earnings. And so it's something that companies do on a pretty regular basis. This is also one of those times where in business, then you're getting a big disruption with AI, right?
Look at the Amazon stock.
Yeah, yeah. See, was I right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So usually, I didn't even look at the stock. I'm not a stock guy, but I typically know that when those big layoffs happen, you do tend to see large increases in stock values. Mm-hmm. And so these are tech companies as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that there's a lot of efficiencies that come with AI and some of the things they're able to do with it and the robotics and all the different things that we're talking about. We talked about Neo, the old home robot.
Dude, don't get me started
on
Neo.
Did we talk about that on Whiskey Wednesday?
We haven't talked about the robot.
We have mixed reviews in the office. I said, I'm not buying a version one, but I might buy a version two, depending on how much work they can do.
Dude, I don't know if you want to get into that, but
no, let's don't get into that because that's I know you're like, heck no, don't put it around me.
I hate that thing, man. I can understand why they'd want robotics and AI for this kind of thing. If you're just doing like warehouse work, delivering packages, you don't got to pay for workers' comp if he blows his back out or something. You just have the robot do it. So that makes sense. But
it's business, right? Yeah. When these big businesses, they're pretty smart and. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, hey, listen, we don't need these jobs anymore. They can be replaced by AI, robotics, everything else. And hopefully those people can go out and find bigger and better jobs, better opportunities. There are going to be, we are kind of in a disruptive state in the industries, certain industries with AI.
Uh-huh.
And businesses are going to lean toward, you know, investing into those technologies, reducing the workforce, you know, AI robots don't call in sick and don't take vacation days. And so those are all things that are beneficial for businesses. And it's the new reality. And it is what it is. I mean, when you see a lot of that, you see those big layoffs and you think, oh, man, Mm-hmm. You know, it's on shaky ground and the economy's mm-hmm. bad. Well, go look mm-hmm. at their stock prices. Go look at their earnings. Mm-hmm. They're pretty high right now.
They're doing just fine.
They're doing all right. Yeah. And so it's unfortunate for those mm-hmm. people that are getting laid off, but mm-hmm. also, the writing has been on the wall for a lot of different jobs, mm-hmm. and so hopefully, if the writing was on the wall, you were looking for different alternatives and different yeah. things you could do to go, you know, on that active income side. Maybe you learn a new trade, maybe you learn something, mm-hmm. a new skill set that is going to be here long term, mm-hmm. that is going to work in conjunction with all the mm-hmm. AI and robotics that are coming online.
Mm. And it kind of, I think, may tie into our last point here about the leveraging the job you had, the life you've always wanted. Maybe you yeah. just got laid off. This could be a new time for you. We'll
yeah,
touch on that later.
Chapter. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll stay for the end of the episode. We'll talk about that. But okay, let's go into short-term rental stuff.
Huh? All right, good. That's okay. Stuff I like to talk about.
All right. So the first point here, why you shouldn't leave Airbnb amid the hike in host fees. Yeah. A lot of people are freaking out. Right,
a lot of people are freaking out. You yeah. see a lot of chatter online. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving Airbnb. I'm gonna work on direct bookings and everything else. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge mistake. You're really making quick knee jerk reactions to stuff, and so you need to take a minute and step back and think about the business we're in and the business we're running. And like any business, there is a cost to acquire customers. Right. And mm-hmm. so there is a customer acquisition cost in every single business. And I've always been a big proponent. We have a very robust direct booking platform training that we do on the mm-hmm. back end of what we're doing with our properties. I'm not saying don't run down the direct booking, the direct booking road. We run down these roads parallel, but I am not kicking the OTAs to the curb because as a business owner and an investor, when mm-hmm. I look at my customer acquisition cost, it is always going to be the cheapest on those OTAs. Mm. And so even with that rise in hikes on, you know, at 15% fees, you know, we were lucky to be paying 3% for customer acquisition with very intentional audiences. And I'm not going to freak out when it goes to 15. I'm going to make adjustments so that my bottom right. line doesn't get hurt.
Right.
But when you are running a business mm-hmm. and when we have short-term rentals and we're an investor and it mm-hmm. sounds really sexy to say, okay, screw Airbnb and I'm going to go do my direct bookings yeah. now.
Yeah.
Well, when you start running down the direct booking road, there's a cost to acquire a customer. We are very, very efficient at it, probably more efficient than I've heard of anybody else online or other coaches or other investors that I've talked to. Mm-hmm. We average about an 8-to-1 return on ad spend on our direct booking.
Wow. Platform. 8-to-1?
8-to-1. So wow. for every dollar we put into advertising, we get about 8 back.
Okay.
So that's been over the course of years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing very well with paid advertising. Mm-hmm. On 8-to-1. Now on there are some markets and some properties that we see somewhere around a 4-to-5-to-1, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but let's say at the very best scenario, an 8-to-1, mm-hmm. that means it's costing me about 12% of my, of that $100 mm-hmm. is going out and to get put one in and get 8 back. Every $100 I make, it costs me about $12, mm-hmm. right? So that's pretty dang close to what I'm paying Airbnb. It's a mm-hmm. little bit less than that mm-hmm. on the best case scenario. Mm-hmm. On the more the average scenario, you're going to be in this situation where you're a good ad campaign, a good direct booking site is going to be 4-to-5-to-1.
Right.
So that means I'm going to be 20-to-25% of my cost to acquire a customer on a direct booking platform that's doing really well. Mm-hmm. So here's the situation. Those OTAs, when Airbnb makes a change like that, mm-hmm. why do we like the OTAs? The thing I love the best about the OTAs is that I can go in and they've spent billions of dollars mm-hmm. building this customer base of a very intentional audience, mm-hmm. audience that is interested in booking properties to rent and stay at. Right. And so for me, if I am an investor and I have a property that I'm looking for those types of consumers, mm-hmm. if I can go tap into that customer base for mm-hmm. a fee mm-hmm. and they charge me that fee and they say, hey, listen, Sean, we're going to charge you 15.5% for every, you know, for all the dollars you make, it's going to cost you 15.5%. When I look at that mm-hmm. and I get mad because it went from 3 to 15.5, it seems like a huge hike, mm-hmm. but it feels like if I feel like, I don't want to pay that. When I really look at it and peel back the layers of the onion on what it costs to acquire a customer, mm-hmm. that's a really good return on my money. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens with the OTAs is they charge us after we make money, after we've already got a booking. They don't charge me anything to be to get beyond there, to be exposed to their customers, everything else. When I'm on my direct booking platforms, guess what? Facebook and Instagram and Google, all of those places where we're putting our ads out and we're paying them to get in front of their customer base, they charge me whether I book or not. And so they're going to be charging me in, whether I book my property or not. And they're also not... they don't have any platforms or audiences that we're tapping into that are very intentional like they are on Vrbo and Airbnb and everything else. So it's harder to stand out, right? Think about when you're on Facebook and Instagram or Google and you're searching stuff, you're doing, you're not there intentionally looking to book a vacation rental. You're doing a whole bunch of other stuff. And so the cost to acquire a customer continues to grow on those platforms because it's really hard to get somebody's attention. And we have to pay for all that attention before we make any money. The OTAs, on the other hand, they don't charge us for all that attention. And we only pay them after we make money. So it's still the safest and easiest place for us to go make money. And running a business or being an investor and trying to get in front of consumers that want to book your properties or buy your product is there's a cost to that. And what a beautiful marketplace that we can go to and only pay the cost if somebody pays us money. So all the mistakes I make and all the things that somebody says no to or I don't put the right product out or I don't have my right pricing on Google, Facebook, Instagram, that costs me money to make those mistakes. It doesn't cost me money. It costs me lost opportunity on the other OTAs, but it doesn't cost me money. And so be very careful to buy into all of the rhetoric out there that after Airbnb makes a change like this, that you're saying, oh, fine, I'm done with Airbnb. This is the last straw. I'm not, I'm running down another road. We should have been running down that road the whole time, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? And so, is that what they say?
I think so. I think that sounds about right. I think I was going to go with it either way, man.
All right. I think they say that. But it's saying, you know, listen, don't, just because the, you know, you don't like one thing, let's not lose a good thing also. Because now the move that Airbnb made, one thing that it did and hopefully will do, and I believe it will, and I think it was their intention, is they're saying, hey, listen, you're, we're really valuable to you hosts because we have a lot of eyeballs. We have a lot of guests looking to book properties. Well, guess what they just made? They, one of the biggest complaints that guests have is they don't like being nickel and dime to death on fees. And so they say, hey, listen, why don't we remove that, make it a better guest experience? And so hopefully you get more exposure and you get more guests coming to that platform, and you might see other hosts or other platforms make similar changes, because if it works for Airbnb and they start to gain market share with guests coming over and saying, hey, listen, we like this. We like this experience that we're having down here now. We can go check out properties. Now you can check out experiences. You can check out services. And you can kind of have a one-stop shop for an amazing experience. And it's not going to cost you a whole bunch of fees. All you're paying is the whatever the host or the service fee provider is charging. And then we take care of the fees. But it's a customer acquisition cost. Just look at it from a business standpoint and say, hey, listen, I'm going to allocate 15 to 20% of my revenue toward customer acquisition. And then you can go play on whatever platform you want to. And if you're really, really good, you can play in direct booking lane as well. And you should learn that skill set. I'm not saying not to do that. I'm just saying a lot of people are right now saying, I'm done with this and I'm only going to go down this road. Well, I promise you that road is the hardest road. It's the last step that we teach people to do because it's like adding fuel to a fire that's already burning. If you don't have a fire that's already burning, you're just throwing gasoline on logs and nothing happens, right? And so direct bookings are not going to save an underperformer. It's not going to save your property and get more bookings if you weren't able to make the OTAs work. But when you really break it down, I think it's a big mistake for all these people saying they're done with these platforms when they make these changes, because you're, you know, you're going to pay to acquire a customer somewhere. And, you know, you can have very intentional customers on these OTAs. They're looking to book properties. A lot of times they're vetted out. You've got some protections, you know, on their, on those platforms, which are kind of nice, you know, and ultimately you're able to, you know, maximize for a minimum or a maximum right now, 15.5%. Some of the other OTAs are less than that. Even though Airbnb made a huge hike, it's still cheaper than you're probably going to pay and be able to acquire, especially if you don't know what you're doing and you're brand new to it. It's, I mean, you'll probably be lucky to do a you know, get put $1 in and get $2 out. right? Yes. And so, you know, it's a fairly cheap customer acquisition channel.
Yeah.
Even with 15.5%, and you're only paying it once somebody books your property.
Mm. Okay. I came up with 3 points while you're going. Let's see if you agree or what you think about my first point here.
Okay.
You may completely disagree. I'm curious. A reason you may want to stay on the OTAs also is because with Vodacy properties, they stand out so well against the competition. The consumer can clearly see a difference as they're scrolling through properties. They can clearly go, okay, that one's way different, right? Whereas if you're just posting it, say, on like Meta ads and, you know, someone's scrolling on Instagram or Facebook and your property pops up, you got to think about what they're seeing on social media. They may be seeing some insane stuff on social media, or they're not even thinking about it at the time and they'll just go right by it, right? But if they're on that specific platform, you stand out way better because you're with these other, your competition.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're judged solely
against
other properties. You're not judged on the best, you know, coolest cat video versus, something else that you might pop up on, on your social platform. And, you know, as you're scrolling, you're only judged against other properties. And, and we know how to really stand out against other properties.
Yeah.
And like, to your point, you've got a lot of extreme stuff on social media that you got to stand out. And even though we might have extreme properties, sometimes they pale in comparison to some of the crap you find on social media.
Yeah, exactly. The thought process.
Like, as far as attention grabbing
stuff. People are there for a reason, right? So you can, they're at least in the mindset of looking at this, whereas on social media, they're not even there.
Right.
My thought process on the next point here, I look up Vrbo. Yes, Vrbo now shows all mandatory fees, including the upfront price displayed to travelers, right? So they're showing the fees. Why aren't people having the same kind of reaction to Vrbo then, just because of Airbnb's their hike?
Well, I think you're reading that a little bit. So what happened is they are showing them.
Right.
Vrbo's showing all the fees.
Right.
But they're still getting, you know, they're the guest is still paying some of them.
I see right? now.
So they're,
I see.
They're okay. not, they're transparent with the fees, but on Airbnb, what Airbnb made is, a guest sees no fees because they're not getting charged any fees. Mm. It's a host fee that's on the back end that's getting charged to the host. So the guest is not seeing any fees.
Interesting.
They're not getting charged a bunch of extra fees. They are still getting charged taxes. But cleaning and all the fees are included in that nightly rate. And so everything's included. Where Vrbo is saying, hey, we're transparent. We're showing it all.
Yeah.
But you're gonna see the breakdown of your nightly rate,
your
cleaning
right
fees, your
you'll see full cost breakdown before me. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a difference there.
How much longer till they do that?
I think they'll wait and see if Airbnb starts to gain market share and a lot of guests start to filter over and start booking and saying, hey, listen, we like this platform a little bit better. It's easier. Mm-hmm. We don't have to pay extra junk fees as far as the guest is concerned and additional fees. And if the guest likes it and it's a better user experience and it actually gains them some market share, then I think you'll see other platforms do it for sure.
Interesting.
If not, right now, Vrbo is, you know, they're very competitive in the eyes of a host saying, hey, listen, you know, we're not charging, we're not going to put all the fees on you. You know, we'll still have split fees and you'll only pay X percent and then the guests will pay an X percent. And so now that, so their argument could be to the host and naturally is right now, just a pricing deal is saying, hey, listen, we got a lot of people on this platform as well. Come over here, put your properties over here.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you don't have to pay as much to book a property. All that's
true.
That.
Okay.
But I think that, Airbnb's move is to gain some market share with the guest and just have the guest come over. Well, if that happens, there's a filter down effect that is beneficial to us as investors. The more guests that love Airbnb and that are there to book properties, the more opportunities we have to book our property because there's more people looking.
Mm, interesting. Okay. So they kind of, no, I think I may have just understood this wrong. It sounds like Airbnb is trying to please the consumer, the guest, whereas Vrbo is trying to please the host.
Yeah, I think they're trying to please both, right? They're going to still be fairly guest-centric as far as what they're trying to do because they know that that's what is so valuable to the host.
Mm.
And to the guest, they have enough hosts that are on those platforms that they used to be very host-centric because the guest is not going to come over to your platform unless you have a lot of options to choose from. Now they have a lot of options to choose from. And so now they focus a little bit more on the guest.
Mm. Okay. All right. I feel satisfied with that. How do you, you want to keep going?
No, that's good.
Okay. Let's go into our next thing. So Expedia Group, they come out with this new article. Here we go. October 28th, 2025. Expedia Group study reveals new insights in travel content amid AI boom. We've got three bullet points here.
Okay.
Video overwhelmingly influences travel booking decisions over static images. Travelers
disagree. totally disagree. I'd love to see this study.
Travelers see value in AI enhanced content, but human input is still critical. Younger generations feel the most emotive towards travel content compared to older generations.
Okay.
So, dude, I love this so much.
So, okay. One, I don't know where they're seeing that video influences nearly three times more than static images and sparks emotion. 71% of travelers say video influences travel decisions versus 24% static images. Long form video sparks the most emotion. So, tell me where they are posting long form video. It's got to be on YouTube. Yeah. Which is a long form video platform,
right?
Short form, maybe Instagram, Facebook, right? When was the last time you talked to a traveler that said, "I'm booking my property," and I saw it on YouTube? They are going to these platforms.
I've never heard that.
That Airbnb doesn't even allow videos. You can post a link to go to a video. Very few people are doing that. Now, I do have a strong opinion about this because we have tried to test video and for a long time, thinking that it's a kind of the new frontier, that it could be like something that is that sets us apart. We have not found that it is makes that big of a difference. We have not found that it's that big of a lever.
Yeah.
And we've found that really good static images on the OTAs specifically, and even when we go to the social platforms and we've tested video versus static, we have not seen anywhere near that same that same study. So I mean, maybe we're wrong. Well, we usually have a really good fingerprint or a pulse on what's going on because of our fingerprint being so large and our collective data is so expansive across multiple markets, multiple demographics, you know, and thousands of properties that we're testing on a regular basis that usually we, you know, we're typically not that far off. I have a pretty strong opinion that that is, there is something we're missing on that study.
Okay.
From the Expedia Group, it says 7,000 people. I don't know where they're getting that info. It just we're in this game every single day. That does not make any sense to me.
I know I can understand the thought process on long form video. When I think long form, I think 5 to 7 minutes long. That seems crazy long. Well, I can somewhat conceptualize in my brain. I can kind of understand why, almost seeing like a trailer. 15, 30 second highlight clip. You know, someone's on the beach, you got B-roll of the waves, people surfing, the hammock and a coconut. I can understand that, right? Just like a commercial, just like on TV. That makes sense to me. But long form, that's where I do get lost. But then also, where do you even post these things?
Yeah.
If you put it in the description of your property, it's got to take someone now away from that. And now do you potentially lose that customer? I mean,
usually I would say when we have tested with video that there's a lot of our guests that are booking our property that love to see the video, but they love to see it after they book the property. They don't watch it previous to booking the property. After they book the property, they're like, yeah, it's awesome that, you know, we saw the video in the guest book and we saw the video in the description. I always tell people don't read the descriptions until they're right before they're going to book the property. So you're hooking them in. And when it comes to marketing, I've said it before, there's three things you always think about in marketing: attract, convert, retain.
Right.
So when you're attracting and converting a customer, it's, I mean, in our world, it's overwhelmingly static images. You know, maybe retaining or getting somebody excited for their upcoming stay. The videos can start to make a difference. And we use videos for those reasons, and we do get good feedback on it. People like it. They're excited about it. You know, gets them, again, it gets them kind of hyped up and pumped up for the stay. They're already coming. So show me more. To attract them and convert them, static images are overwhelmingly what we're testing, tweaking, refining, getting really good. The other thing that is interesting, it says that that they like AI. You were mentioning that people are, you know, that they don't mind having the AI and see that it is great to use it to enhance content. I also think that that is untrue. in our experience. One of the fastest ways to get a bad review is to have, you know, use those images and have them doctored up with AI and made to look really amazing. And it did a great job of attracting, converting a customer. Mm-hmm. That customer opens the door and they're looking around thinking, shit, I think I got keys to the wrong place, right? This doesn't look anything like it did. And we see that a lot in our game where bad reviews come because people have used way too much AI enhancement.
Mm.
And it's misleading to the consumer to the point where a lot of the OTAs and stuff are going to start, in my opinion, start cracking down.
Mm. I would think so too. I mean, right here it says 41% of travelers say they feel AI generated content is useful, but needs to be combined with human input, while only 16% of travelers don't mind how the content is created as long as it's useful. Yeah, I don't
know. Useful being what? Like what is the context of useful? All right. Like I'm looking at it from the lens of setting, you know, attracting, converting customers, setting expectations, making sure everybody's walking into this thing with their eyes wide open. They walk into my property and they're so excited because it's exactly what they thought and maybe even more, not the opposite. Not, holy crap, this thing was awesome online. This looks nothing like it does in real life. So maybe we're reading this study wrong.
Here we go right here. Fully AI generated influencers and landscapes spark negative emotions and viewers expressed unease, skepticism, and annoyance. Yeah, right there.
I would agree.
Yeah.
So they mentioned that, but they're also saying having an AI enhanced and all this stuff is okay. I don't know. I mean, maybe you're just using AI to edit. This makes it sound like,
yeah,
hey, use videos, the new frontier. You got to have these beautiful videos of your property, man. People just aren't going to see them. Mm. I mean, I don't think people see them.
Yeah.
And you better have both maybe.
No.
And then it can tee that person up for, you know, getting really excited coming into your property. But I completely disagree.
Maybe
71% of the people, 2/3 of the people saying, yeah, we use video to make our buying decisions. We have not seen that to be true.
Well, then it's kind of a tough argument when you can't even post a video on your listing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like,
that's, you got to post a link to go off to another platform to watch the video.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to our next one.
If 2/3 of consumers were converting based on video, I promise you the OTAs would allow video.
Yeah.
Promise.
Mm.
Like it's, you think that they're, you know, they're I would assume they're longer? Pretty damn smart.
How much longer?
I don't know. I think it'll come.
Yeah.
I think for sure.
Especially with this stuff, the experiences and services, I would think that's going to be there.
Yeah.
Right.
I would definitely think it's coming. Uh-huh. Video is definitely is going to be coming. It's a matter of how long and what does it? They might think the same thing I think. They might have tested it. I would assume that we're not the only ones testing this stuff.
True.
Right. And so Airbnb has big budgets and a lot of really smart people on those OTAs and they don't allow it. Or they don't have it on there. Probably for a reason. It's not like they haven't thought of it.
True.
You know, so.
Well, just, you know, people keep listening and watching because the second they do drop it, we're going to keep you updated.
We'll keep you
updated. We're the place to be for this education updates.
Maybe, you know, completely disagree with Expedia Group, but what they're saying. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading it
wrong. In time. We'll see. We'll see. Verbo, they just came out, they came out, I believe, in May with the Verbo Care Initiative, but now they just updated. They're allowing guests to post photos in their reviews.
Yeah.
And then my immediate thought goes, you know, people with dusty vents under the beds, they're dirty. They find a hair in the bed or something. The fan blades have dust or whatever. Now this, I mean, I really don't know here. This seems like it all falls on the cleaning lady, the cleaning man or whatever. It depends on that relationship there that they do a good job, right? But how, let's go into this first and foremost. How do you vet out a good cleaning person? How do you understand that they're actually going to do a good job?
Man, what I'll do is I always look at reviews. Like people mention two things in reviews all the time, communication and cleanliness. Mm-hmm. So we judge property managers based on what the reviews say. So we ask for their portfolio properties. We go on Airbnb, Vrbo, and we look at the reviews and we see how often a property manager is mentioned and how great the communication is mentioned, if at all. And a good property manager is going to be mentioned by name a lot of times in most of the reviews, and they're going to be mentioned in 90% of the reviews. You're going to hear the guests say, man, they communicated so well. They were so available, blah, blah, blah. Like those are two things that guests really just naturally put in reviews, is communication. The other one is cleanliness. And so we look at the same thing. We look and say, okay, how are they mentioning? And what, like, if these are the, this is the portfolio of properties you're cleaning, you're the way that that property is, the cleanliness and the way that that property is presented is going to be mentioned in reviews. And so in my opinion, it's the best way to go look at what somebody says about a property and the cleanliness, and it gets that third party validation. So, and then going back to the, you know, the Vrbo care deal, right?
Right.
Where they're going to say, hey, listen, we're going to let guests now post pictures in their review to back up what they're saying, right? Yeah. It used to be a he said, she said type of a thing.
Right.
And if it happens to be cleanliness and they show underneath the bed and it doesn't look like it's been dusted or vacuumed for a long time, you're going to see it. And so this is
so scary.
This is, you know, it shouldn't be though. It really shouldn't be. If you do a good job, it shouldn't be that scary, right?
Okay. Yeah, true.
And so, you know, it's always, you know, it's like, hey, listen, we're going to show receipts. And if I'm going to give you a bad review for cleanliness and I have the ability.
Let's see it.
And so it's also why it's so important though as well. And a lot of your cleaners now, when they're done with a property and they're about ready to leave, they take photos of everything and timestamp those photos right before a guest shows up so that there's receipts on that side as well. Like this is how it was left. This is how you walk in. So that you try to avoid the rare instance when somebody is just trying to get a discount or something like that, or you leave a bad review, and they throw some dirt on the ground and take a picture of it, and you know, kind of, you know, it's
right.
That stuff, immediately hosts are worried about that kind of stuff. That stuff happens so few and far between. People just aren't built like that, in my opinion. Does it happen occasionally? Yes. Is it an outlier situation? Yes. And so this allows you to have the receipts on the opposite side as well. Like, hey, listen, this is timestamp right before you walked. You checked in, you know, 2 hours before you checked in. And I have the exact same picture as we locked up. And there was no dirt there on that floor that you might have just thrown it on.
I do kind of like the idea of the receipts aspect of it, that someone's just going to be like, it was dirty. Well, okay, if it was, back it up. Let's picture it didn't happen. You know, let's see it.
Yeah.
So
we're kind of coming to that stage in life where it's just like, hey, listen, we're just going to post the pictures and show it and show the receipts. And can you doctor that up? Can you set, you know, a dirty scene up to try to do that? Yes. Is that going to happen? So don't everybody email us and say, what if this happens? Yes, I get it. Once in a while it happens. It's an outlier. Very, very seldom, in my opinion, do those things happen.
Yeah. All right. Let's go into experience, our last.
Not just opinion.
Let's go into our last thing here. Okay. Mindset, motivation, leveraging the job you hate into the life you've always wanted now. Okay. So we can kind of, let's take it from the aspect of the Amazon worker, since we kind of talked about that a little bit earlier today. Maybe their passion project was being the guy that put your Amazon Prime package together, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I would say for most, it probably wasn't their ideal dream job, right? So are we going to, you can either think of it as like a, you know, a blessing, or you can go into the victim mindset of woe is me, right? And you can either pull yourself by the bootstraps, or you can wallow and just, you know, get a check, right? But here comes the, I guess, the mental part of it. How does somebody access the part of their brain that's really uncomfortable? The part of the brain where they go, I'm not happy about this. I don't like this. Woe is me. How do they now activate the other side where they go, no, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to change. I'm going to go after something, my dream. I don't know if it's going to work, but I thought this was going to work and it didn't. Right? How do they go into this?
Yeah. So one, most people are not in their dream job, right? Most of us have jobs to pay bills.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the fact that, you know, that we're searching for the dream job, that we wake up every day and we feel like, oh man, I can't, you know, I'm so fulfilled. Yeah. Those are rare. And There are people that have that in, but that's a rare case. And so it's saying, hey, listen, you know, are you, when something happens, you got to look at it and say, listen, am I going to look at it from the lens of what opportunities lie here? Right. Because there's always an opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. If it was a job you didn't like, well, it's an opportunity to go find a job you might like a little bit better. Maybe you don't love it, but you like it better than the one you had. Mm. Maybe you go make more money. Maybe you learn something new and, you know, you walk into a different industry that you didn't know about. So, you know, but let's say you're in a job that you maybe don't love and you're saying, hey, listen, I'm trying. The job is a tool to be able to earn some money.
Right.
Active income. Right. And like we always sell, wealth building has to do with a number of different things. And first is earning money.
Right.
Next is saving money. Mm-hmm. The third is investing money. Mm-hmm. And so we're saying, hey, listen, how can I leverage this money I'm making, the time I'm spending, working so hard to make this money, live below my means, start saving some, and then start to invest some. And so when you have a goal at the end of the day of where you're going to put that money, ultimately, you're going to say, hey, listen, I'm going to be a little bit more disciplined. I'm going to, maybe instead of going and buying that, you know, whatever the impulse buy is of the day and you want to go spend some money on. And when you have a goal and you have an end goal, a lot of times you will not make that decision. You'll say, hey, listen, now I'm working toward the investment house or I'm working towards something. And if you don't have that goal, a lot of times it's really easy to just say, oh, yeah, no worries. I got this money. I'll just go blow it. I'll make more tomorrow. And that happens. This is where, I'm going to tip our whiskey table over. This is where I feel really nervous for the younger generation that is starting to have that mindset of I'm never going to be able to buy a house. Because guess what? That's a big goal and a big purchase for a lot of people. And you're working hard, you're making some money. Well, if you buy into the fact that you're never going to be able to buy a house, you're just going to rent forever. Well, then now you step down and say, oh, now I don't need to save for that. Now I'll just go spend my money on a new car. Or I'm going to go spend my money on something else. So it becomes the next thing. And many times that next thing is not a great investment for you, right? And so it's a mindset of saying, I'm going to use this job and this money, this active income that I'm making to start to build the life that I say I want, right? And it takes discipline and it takes some hard days and it takes being able to say no to a lot of things over the years. But when you have the end goal in mind, it's easier to say no to because you have something you're working toward, right? And so that's where I always say, you know, at least be working on building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Right. It's what, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like you're going to get fired from Amazon today and then think, okay, well now, because I got fired, the opportunity is I go find my dream job and I'm going to just wake up tomorrow and everything's going to be perfect.
Right.
No, that's not going to be the case. Most likely.
Well, plus now there's 14,000 other people trying to do the same thing as you, buddy. So it's going to be kind of tough.
I have properties that pay my bills.
Right.
I love doing what we do at Vodacy. Like I don't have to come to work every day, but I do. I choose to. So I'm one of the few that has actually something that I actually do love doing every single day. I enjoy waking up. I don't ever regret coming into work. Do we have hard days? Yeah. I'm not saying that every day is super easy. We have plenty of days where we're like, oh man, this is a grind,
right?
And we're working through all kinds of crap. It's a business. And so I'm not saying that. I'm saying we built something that I get to make the choice of what we're doing.
Right.
That didn't happen overnight. That was 25 years of building, right, for me. And it was a lot of ups and downs, and it was a lot of time, but there was always something that we wanted to build toward. And so it makes those hard days easier to put in and easier to dedicate yourself and easier to say no to things throughout the years because we have an end goal, right? And so I think that's what it comes down to.
Okay, you've hit on some good points here. My first thought process is people need to have some kind of target, some kind of goal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
This whole idea is like, you know, leveraging the job you hate into the life you've always wanted. Well, what's the life you've always wanted?
Right.
What's the goal you want to go towards? And then the second part, 25, you've been building this for 25 years. For so many people, I don't have that kind of time. That takes too long. They want to skip steps. They want to get it to the fastest. And that's going to be a tough ride, right? That's going to be tough. Now, do you try and teach someone, no, sit in time. Believe that it could take 25 years or even longer. Do you tell people like, understand that? Or do you tell them, no, try and accelerate that time. Try and do it in 10. And you may do it in 13, but at least you went for 10. Or do you think, I guess my question is, should you try and tell people that it's going to be okay, that it's going to take a lot of time? Or should you try and tell them to get to it as fast as humanly possible?
Both. You tell them both.
Okay.
You have to be prepared for both, right?
Okay.
We're saying, hey, listen, this is a big goal. Like, have big goals, right? Have 3, 5, 10-year goals that you're working toward. But they can't be so far out. You're going to step up your goals, right? There's things that I did, you know, big goals that I had when I started Vodacy are like, now looking back, it's like, holy man, I can't believe that's I was playing that small, right? It's like you will look back and think, holy crap, I can't believe how far we've come. And it's not where we started with the goals. We're always having goals that are that we're shooting for,
right?
But then you're gonna catch them, and then you gotta re-up. You gotta keep like saying, hey, listen, I gotta stay motivated. But it always takes time. You know, I'm always like, man, I can't believe how many people we talk to that are like, I just don't have time to do that. And you're like,
yeah, I hear that so often. I hear that a lot.
Okay. No problem.
Yeah.
You know, time's going by regardless.
Yeah. Right? Sun's going to come up.
Yeah.
It's going to come up either way.
It doesn't. You're going to look back 5 years from now and you're going to look and say, you know, I'm really glad I said I didn't have time to work towards something. Or you're going to look back and say, man, I'm glad I rolled up my sleeves and did something.
Mm.
And so one way or the other, you're looking back 5 years from now and you're five years from now, life is going to be dictated on the choices you're making today.
Mm.
And so now does it need to take my path took 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Can you accelerate that? And should you try to accelerate that? Hell yes.
Okay.
Try to find somebody that's doing what you're doing and learn from them.
Yeah.
Get mentors. Try to find somebody that can help you accelerate that path forward.
Okay.
But don't be such a prima donna that you're like, I just don't have the time, you know, that person that wants the view but doesn't want to climb. Right,
right, right, right.
And so it's like, hey, listen, if you don't have time, I get it.
I feel like this is going to be a mixture of multiple things here, but why wouldn't somebody do that? Is it fear? Is it the shame of, or they're scared of being humiliated that they don't reach those goals? They don't have enough confidence in themselves. Are they compliant? They just go, you know, I get paid just enough.
Right. I think it's a combination of all of them, depending on the person. It could be a little of both or a little of all of it. It could be one specific thing. I think that for the majority of the people who listen to our podcast, the majority of people that we listen to or that listen to us and we talk to they're just really comfortable, right? They make pretty good money, they've got pretty good jobs, they've been pretty successful, and they get to the point where they're like, their back's not against the wall, there's nothing that's really pushing them to say, I need to do something different. I will tell you that, you know, this last year was kind of a whirlwind year for me, and you know, a lot of major things going on in my life. You know, I got slapped with an IRS audit that we were super nervous about.
Yeah.
And then my mom was battling her final chapter of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And having made the decisions that we made previously allowed me to focus on things that were most important then, right? I was in a position to where I could take a lot of time off with my mom. I could be at the hospital every single day she was there.
Mm-hmm.
We would go on trips throughout the summer and we would spend a lot of time together. Those things that my brother and sister, frankly, weren't able to do as much of because they had to go to work. Mm-hmm. They had to punch a clock.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't get paid.
Yeah.
And it made it hard to not, you know, for us, we had stuff in the works. Mm-hmm. And as grateful as I am for those things, and a lot of times we build it for the good times, seeing it and having all that stuff built for the bad times,
right,
when you're saying, hey, listen,
right,
you know, I've got, you know, we had months left when it you know, reared its ugly head back again, cancer did. And we were like, hey, listen, this is the end. Mm-hmm. And we gotta make the best of what we have. And we had a couple months where we were able to spend a lot of time together.
Mm.
And we were able to, good days, bad days, everything in between. And I didn't have to worry about all that other stuff.
Mm.
And so I think that our clients, when they get comfortable, they think they have all the time in the world.
Yeah.
And for me, this year was one of those reminders that you don't have as much time as you think. You really don't. And so you really just have to look in the mirror and say, what's a priority? What's important?
Mm-hmm.
And usually what we say we want, It's not easy to get, and it's going to take time. It's going to take effort. Can you accelerate it? Yes, usually, depending on what path it is. Somebody else has run down it before you, so hopefully they can take that baton and say, don't make the same mistakes I made, but you still have to run down the road.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I heard this chick was talking. I forgot who it was. Some chick. She said, you pray for the bus, but then you run as fast as you can to catch it.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to pray, but.
Yeah.
So how often should these people reassess their goals? Right? Is this kind of more, maybe it's different for everybody, but say you're getting comfortable, right? The people that are listening, you get comfortable. Should you be reassessing your goals every year, 6 months?
Yeah. I mean, it's natural to do it annually, right? Yeah. Everybody kind of reassesses coming up on the end of the year, the first of the year. I feel like you should always be doing it. Like, I'm not a huge, like, you'll hear me talk about, I don't like New Year's resolutions and all that kind of stuff that everybody does, because I think it's just a habit that you should always be in of saying, you know, what's the next chapter? What am I working toward right now?
Right.
And that's a constant conversation you're having with yourself on a regular basis. I find that when I get the most uneasy and when I'm not always as, I feel as sharp, it's when I start to sit on my hands and not doing a lot, right? I always feel better when I'm moving towards something bigger and I'm working hard on something and that momentum is there. And even if it's not working out, you always feel the most energized when you feel like you're moving to that next step. Mm. When you're just kind of in, you know, just limbo. Status quo mode. Yeah. Like everything's status quo. Uh-huh. I feel like I feel the most, you know, down and I don't really get depressed. So I don't want to use the word depressed because some people do get depressed. But like just not
full potential.
Yeah, you're just kind of going with the motions.
Yeah.
You don't feel great. Your mood's not always great. You feel tired. And I never feel tired when I'm running full speed and I feel like burning the candle at every end and just focused on something. I feel the most energized during those times. And I think it's always reassessing and saying, hey, and that's how I judge. That's kind of my litmus test is I'm kind of feeling a little bit status quo right now. I need to push myself. I need to go do something new and really maybe something a little bit bigger, work on something. And, some of our people that are listening might be in that situation. Yeah. They're getting comfortable sitting on the sidelines. Yeah. And in my opinion, that's a really dangerous place to be.
Okay. Now the last point here, staying humble while you hit these goals. What's the line between you got furloughed, you got fired, you're finally going, you know what, I'm going to leverage this job and you're working and then later you go do your thing when you're setting these goals and 6 months in, you hit one of your goals. Do you keep the head held high, right? And you go, oh, I'm going to do it. Or do you kind of bury the head a little bit and just keep chugging along? How does somebody stay focused, but do you give yourself a little bit of time to brag?
Yeah,
you gotta celebrate a little bit, right?
You gotta give yourself a pat on the back.
I think that's a huge thing. The reason I ask is I feel like people all the time are saying you don't get to celebrate, you just keep chugging along, you just keep going. Absolutely.
Be proud of yourself. Like look back and say, man, I can't believe I did that. Look where I started from. And it's okay to give yourself a pat on the back. It's okay to celebrate and rejoice in some of the because you see people win championships and you know, they're holding the trophy and they're crying and they're so happy. Mm-hmm. It's not most of them, like though you look at them and they're like so emotional because they know what it took to get there. Yeah. Right. And it's okay to do that. It's okay it's okay to pause for a minute and say, man, look what I just did. Right.
Yeah.
And then you get back to work and you say, hey, listen, you know, that's, you know, great. Now I set that bar. Let's go set another one. But absolutely, you should be grateful, thankful, celebrate all the challenges that you probably overcame to reach that goal, and then go do it again, do something else.
Is there like a certain quote or anything you really like that you kind of, you know, puts a fire back in you? Is there anything that kind of, I mean, I love Julius Caesar, I came, I saw, I conquered. I love that idea that you just, you know. You see and you go, oh, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to win.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go and you do it. So I kind of, every time I hear that, I kind of get fired up. Is there anything that
I like? I like the Bible verse to who much is given, much is expected.
Yeah.
You know, so I always try to remind myself of that as well. Like, hey man,
you're given a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that have been placed in front of us, every one of us. And, and that means that there's a lot of expectations and so don't waste it. Don't sit on it.
Yeah.
Don't, I love to remind myself of that and then look at some people that are way less fortunate than me and have way more challenges that just go absolutely crush every single day.
Yeah.
And they're, and you're like, man,
yeah,
look what they're doing. Look, look at, like, I have nothing to complain about. And so, you know, I always try to remind myself of those things. Yeah. And that a lot of times inspires me to go, okay, let's go do something. Let's go try something else.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry. This is gonna be my last point. Okay. This is gonna be my last one. I promise. I promise. There's a, there's kind of this new, I think I at least have perceived it this way. Maybe you disagree, but I've perceived it this way, that there's this new feeling of, you know, the most successful people, they don't rely on snippets of motivation. Like, someone's going to be listening to this right now and they're going to go, man, I need to reassess my goals. And I felt like, at least for me, it's perceived that the most successful people don't need somebody else to light that fire underneath them. Do you kind of agree with that? Or do you go, no, everybody at some point is maybe it will hit this low and everybody kind of needs to, you know, hit the guy, need somebody to push them a little bit forward. Is it bad of you if you need a little bit of inspiration every once in a while?
No, like, I don't think it's bad of you, but I think you have to realize that motivation fades, inspiration fades, right? It's here to get here today, gone tomorrow. And it's usually not even lasting a day most of the time. And so you have to, you can't rely on that to continue to push you forward long-term, right? And so is it wrong? No, I love motivational quotes. I love seeing some of those, like when you're asking about quotes and different things and reminders, they're fun, right? But but also I do think the most successful people are a very disciplined group, right? They're able to do the things that need to get done even when they don't want to, right? It's not, I always, and forgive me for not trying to pick on anybody or make fun of anybody for not doing it my way. It always drives me crazy when I see people showing what time they wake up and showing themselves in the gym and showing them doing all this stuff. Yeah. I mean, I just think it's, I don't know, maybe that does motivate somebody. Maybe it's inspirational for somebody to see that. I just feel like, just go do it. Like, and I feel like the most successful people, they just do. They have the discipline to wake up and they do their thing. They don't need to put it on social every single day. You don't see any of that stuff from me. And and it's because of my feeling toward successful people that I look up to. The last thing they would do is show their morning routine. And that yeah, they have one, and they have very disciplined ones. And likewise, I do too. I mean, I have a very specific routine every single day. And but you don't see me showing what time I'm waking up, and it's early. And you know, and it's you don't see me you know, filming myself in the gym. And it's early every day, and it's every day. And you know, you don't see me, you know, in the office like making phone calls and doing the things that we're doing all day every day. I just feel like that motivation and inspiration does fade, and it's fleeting. And I think the most successful people have the discipline to be able to do it even when they don't want to do it. And I think that it's, there's a lot of confidence that comes when you make a commitment with yourself. Let's say you're not that person. Let's say you're not the person that is, that is really disciplined and has that routine, and you're going to go do that, and you want to, and you get motivated, and you're like, hey, let's do this. What I would do during that motivation time and your inspiration time is write down some things you're going to do and then keep those commitments to yourself, not to anybody else, to keep them to yourself. And when you start to keep commitments that you make to yourself, it feels really good and it feels really empowering and you feel really strong. And and because you know that there are times that you're waking up in the morning, you're going to go to work out, and the last thing you want to do is work out. And then you go do it. And then after you're done, you have this level of confidence, and that you're like, man, I just did that. I just kept that commitment to myself. And then you go conquer the day, and then the day's better. And then you stack good days on each other, right? And you stack, and those things start to turn into like major accomplishments and things that you're doing and ultimately become habits. And I think that successful people do a really good job of that.
And I'm getting fired up. I hope the listeners are too, man. We're done. We got to call it. I've surpassed all with questions on the time limit. So sorry, guys, but hope you guys enjoyed it.
We went down like the whole personal development side. I feel like I'm not really a high performance personal development coach by any stretch. So all of you listening, I apologize in advance if that was not if that was not qualified advice. But the short-term rental stuff was qualified. I will stand by all of that as our expertise and the things that we actually do know one thing or two about. So we'll wrap it up, you guys. We appreciate you spending your time with us. As always, our show has been growing.
Yes,
Jake's been showing me the numbers.
Here we go.
Great job to you guys. Thank you for that. We don't run ads or sponsorships or promotions on the show of any sort. The only way it grows is if you guys share it. So if you know somebody else wants to walk into this game with their eyes wide open and learn a little bit about short-term rental investing and be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things help us a lot. Mm-hmm. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final, most important thing at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, Lane.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.